Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 703, Interview with Daniel Hopsicker, catching up with the herd shot round the world. This has been recorded on February 7th of the year 2010. By the way, the bad pun in the title refers to the Mad Cow Morning News. That is the website and weekly periodical feature of Daniel Hopsicker, who is our guest. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Hey, good to be with you, dude.
Well, you've been downloading once again some more names and intersecting institutions which form a significant part of a criminal and power political milieu which has, among other things, overseen the airlines and the flight training schools through which some of the September 11th hijackers have infiltrated, and which also has more connections than a switchboard. Let's review a few of these names, Daniel, because a lot of this was new to me.
Mm-hmm. The Disney angle is probably something that you're familiar with.
Disney?
He bought Arvida. Disney sold Arvida to JMB, which is where Sternlicht and Gorab met, and Sternlicht did the deal.
Arvida is whom?
Was the real estate arm of Disney.
Oh, okay. And JMB is? Or was?
Is a big real estate company in... it's got something to do with the Bass Brothers, as a matter of fact.
I'm pretty sure. But down in Texas. Down in the... It is, and one of the main people, by the way, involved with Disney's real estate operations is Prince Al-Waleed of Saudi Arabia, who's not only a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, but the second largest stockholder in News Corp, as well as the second largest stockholder in Silvio Berlusconi's European media empire. So, yeah, no wonder the Venice City Council couldn't bring these folks to heel.
They don't even know who they are.
A lot of these names are new to me.
Well, because they sold the FBO at the Venice airport to an operator, which is a legal fiction, called Tri-State Aviation, that incorporated a week before the sale, owned by three individuals who, between them, could probably pay for the tip, at a good meal in New York. Okay? I mean, these three individuals, I mean, who was it used to? Somebody in the 20s used to put his assets in the names of strippers that worked for him at one of his clubs, and I forget who. But this is just as insulting as that. If, for instance, anything were to go wrong, not that anything ever goes wrong there, but if anything were to go wrong, the ability of these three individuals to be responsible for it in any sort of serious way, especially financially, is non-existent.
Well, not only that, but given the nature of the individuals who have tabbed them to be front men, if they make any attempt at resisting, that's it.
But they come highly recommended.
Yeah, I bet they do.
And it was like this guy, this federal receiver, Bert Wyand, nothing would do, but that they had to run it. They had to own it. I mean, he the city wanted to buy it. He wouldn't deal with them. There was another buyer in Sarasota that wanted to buy it, and when he became aware of how crooked the process was, he called me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, do you know who these guys are? And more, okay? And more. They also, this guy Gorab also incorporated a company that sells planes to the CIA. They're involved in renditions. Okay, mm-hmm. Planes used in renditions. Okay, he's for the Navy, for an Annapolis company. I'm finding out the names of the company. I mean, AeroCAC Specialization Corporation. Do you know that's a CIA front? They're located at 201 West Street, Suite 200 in Annapolis, Maryland. They incorporated on September 27th, 2001 in the state of Florida.
September
27th? 2001.
About a little over 2 weeks after.
In the state of Florida. And today, they probably own 2 or 3 dozen FBOs around the country.
Yeah, if it's Annapolis, one wonders maybe it's ONI, not, you know, CIA or something.
Well,
you know what, Daniel?
That's way above my pay grade. I mean, the CIA is not that big an organization, I understand. But, if the mud sticks, so be it. If it was as easy as, like, looking in the windshields of guys you know have connections to the government, you know, to see, you know, where they park their car in the lot, you know, they don't have CIA parking stickers.
Yeah. But just a question or a suggestion. One of the things that I've learned to do over the years, and you know, that is use the term intelligence, because one of the things that makes it that much tougher
to even
spot a covert operation, say of CIO and I whoever, is that a lot of these networks have now been privatized.
Sure.
So I use the term intelligence because whether it's CIA or DIA or ONI or MI6 or some foreign thing or one of these private networks.
Well, it's what E. Howard Hunt called clandestine services.
And the only thing we know for sure is
have I mentioned E. Howard Hunt yet today?
E. Howard Hunt?
Have I mentioned E. Howard Hunt's connections to what's going on in Venice today?
No. Go ahead. By the way, it makes me feel old, Dan. We should probably explain who E. Howard Hunt was. He was a veteran CIA officer, deeply involved with Bay of Pigs, and best known as one of the Watergate burglars.
That's right. And supposedly was in Dallas on the day of the Kennedy assassination, which wouldn't be the shock of the century. Let me begin.
Yeah, no, E. Howard, how does E. Howard Hunt relate to Venice?
I'm about to tell you, but I was going to begin with an anecdote. Did you ever see the movie what's that guy's name? Anyway, E. Howard Hunt we know who he was. He lived in Sarasota. He lived in Sarasota, and when he got busted in the Watergate, the Nixon White House needed some place to stash him, to sheep dip him. And where did they put him? But in the Federal Education Office, Education for the Handicapped. I mean, everybody's for Education for the Handicapped. That was run by the man who is today the mayor of Venice, whose name is Ed Martin. And he's one of the good guys.
Okay.
Ed Martin is one of the good guys, and it's on Ed Martin's website that I first learned that E. Howard Hunt went to work for him after Watergate. But, you know, there's obviously a lot to that story.
Well, you know, that really is a very good cover because, you know, if you want to get somebody, you know, first of all, stashed out of the public eye, you know, the Education for the Handicapped or Disabled, we should be politically correct, that isn't something that gets a lot of publicity. And plus, what publicity it's going to get, that's nice. You know, I think people with disabilities should be educated, blah, blah, blah.
Well, yeah, but the important thing here is if you're going to stash somebody, it has to be with somebody you trust. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and while I think Ed Martin is on the side of the angels today, you know, he's a retired guy living in Venice, Florida, and he decided he didn't like the sound of what they were planning out of the Venice airport, and didn't like what had been going on. It cannot be totally by accident that the current mayor of Venice knew E. Howard Hunt. Okay.
And by the way, in terms of one of my favorite terms, Daniel, which is networking, people get, you know, when you use the term conspiracy, people get all bent out of shape, and everybody out come the whistles and the whoopee cushions. But networking and E. Howard Hunt, aside from Watergate, and I believe he was involved in the Kennedy assassination, though he's not the tramp. But E. Howard Hunt goes all the way back to the OSS faction that was working in the Pacific and was inextricably linked with the China lobby.
Yeah, and now let's recap, okay?
Uh-huh.
Let's recap briefly and list some of the people whose lives have been inextricably linked to the Venice, Florida airport.
Mm-hmm.
It begins back after World War II with John Ringling North, a former OSS agent,
okay,
who moved the winter headquarters of Ringling Circus to the airport itself. Actually, it was, you know, it's adjacent to the airport, and part of that facility is still there. John Ringling North. John Ringling North wasn't just any OSS agent either. John Ringling North was the OSS agent who cut a deal with the Sicilian Mafia that for their help during the invasion
of Sicily.
Yeah, that led to the release of Lucky Luciano.
Yeah. By the way, that, for listeners who'd like to detail that, that is covered at, not Mr. North that I recall, but that particular gambit is covered at considerable length in AFA program number 24, so people can examine that. Go ahead, Daniel. Go ahead. So John Ringling North is OSS, and he's one of the guys who helps.
And now let's take just a two-second digression to see how when companies and names are involved with spooks, they stay that way.
Mm-hmm.
Ringling Brothers today is owned by a man named Kenneth Feld. When a woman, hapless female journalist, wanted to write an wrote an article for Rhaegar Days magazine about 8 years ago about how Kenneth Feld's Ringling Brothers Circus mistreated elephants, Kenneth Feld hired the former worldwide head of covert operations for the CIA, a man named Claire George, who engaged in an eight-year campaign, covert campaign against this woman, of harassing her, surveilling her, and even trying to break up her marriage.
Interesting.
Claire George.
Again, the term networking.
So you would think, you know, the Ringling Brothers Circus plays a brief role in our story, and it does. I mean, Ringling Brothers had the Clown College in Venice, too, which the CIA used to send, maybe they still do, sent new agents to go through. And when I found that out, I was shocked. Why would the CIA be sending new agents to go to Clown College? I mean, you know, other than the obvious reasons, it makes a good joke, to learn sleight of hand.
Mm-hmm.
They went there to learn sleight of hand. So John Ringling North is kind of like where the CIA starts in our story, and that was the OSS, and that's before World War II, or during World War II. Well, then we move forward 12 years, and there is an aerospace defense contractor testing missiles at the Venice airport in 58, 59, 60, and 61. And it's called Chance Vought, V-O-U-G-H-T.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, at the time they were in Venice, they're owned by a guy who merges the company into what became a major defense contractor in the 60s.
Ling Temco Vought.
That guy's name is Colonel D.H. Byrd, Harry Byrd, who is probably most well known for owning the Texas School Book Depository that Lee Harvey Oswald, as we all know, shot President Kennedy from.
Well, actually, from which he allegedly shot President Kennedy.
I was being ironic.
I know.
I
know.
Guess irony, you know, is something that you just picked up at the laundry, Dave.
I know. It happens. And wasn't Byrd also, as I recall, the head of
the CAP, the Civil Air Patrol, where Barry Seal met Lee Harvey Oswald
and David Ferry.
Fell under the tutelage of David Ferry.
Yeah.
You know what?
So this is how the...
I'm moving through the story, but I got to stop and tell you the wisdom I learned along the way while I do it. And one of the things that I was told 5 years ago now, and I was not smart enough quite yet to realize how brilliant this was a retired customs agent in Louisiana. I was expressing my amazement that somebody whose name I had heard another connection had something to do with something I just found out about. And he says, well, you know, that's because they all know each other. He says, there aren't all that many of them to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Networking.
Yeah. So when you hear about guys like the U.S. attorney, Republican Baptist U.S. attorney in the Western District of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, who looked the other way while Barry Seal bought $5 billion worth of cocaine, you know, into Arkansas in the 80s. When a guy like that becomes head of the DEA 10 years later, it's not because he's the most brilliant guy in the world, but they just don't have that deep a bench, I don't think.
Yeah, and it also, it brings to mind, too, Daniel, why they would use some of these frontmen, some of these nobodies, as you put it, and put another name in there, put another face in there, and then if and when the thing goes belly up, we can just cash them in and bring in somebody else. And if they try to make a fuss, well, either they can go to prison for the rest of their lives, or maybe they'd be found floating in Biscayne Bay.
So we got OSS agent John Ringling North of Venice Airport, then we got Harry Byrd, who's testing missiles at the Venice Airport and owns the Texas School Book Depository, and then
heads the Civil Air Patrol.
In the Civil Air Patrol, and he was did you know this? He was conveniently away during the assassination on safari in Africa for 2 weeks, something he had never done before.
Yeah,
and when he came back, there was a brand new fat contract sitting on his desk for jet fighters. And his company became one of a half a dozen in a very favored nation Air Force program, which lasted all the way through the Vietnam War, in which defense contractors were let not to the highest bid, but privately, and that was called Operation Big Safari. Okay, this is by the by. Okay,
bring them back alive, huh?
So, when I found out Harry Byrd was involved at the Venice Airport, I thought, God, who else could be? And did a brief search, and on Mary Farrell, God bless her, rest her soul, website, I found a letter from the sheriff of Sarasota County about the JFK assassination, about somebody at the Venice Airport, to the Tampa FBI. And the sheriff, is reporting that Sarasota Sheriff's Department has received information that a guy in Venice who has been arrested for drug smuggling had told a friend of his, who happened to be a Sarasota Sheriff's deputy, that he was going to Cuba in 1969 to assassinate a man there, I believe in a Cuban jail, who was one of the four or five men who had been a part of the Kennedy assassination, according to this man. And that when he returns from this, should all go well, he will be rich. And indeed he was. And that man's name is Stephen Ruth. Stephen Ruth was convicted third time on major drug smuggling felonies in 1992 and given 60 years in prison. Subsequent to that, 2 years later, he was convicted again, this time of hiring someone to kill the prosecuting attorney, the judge, and his own defense attorney. And so, presumably, he would have had something tacked on to that 60-year sentence, right?
That seems like a logical conclusion.
I would have thought so, but this is Florida. By 1999, he was out of prison.
Yeah.
Out of prison.
Mm-hmm. So I guess you could say that he was ruthless. Go ahead. It's awful, awful. I know. That was terrible. Go ahead.
And then, of course, we have the guy that made Wally Hilliard rich from UCB Bank in San Francisco, who had been the executive vice president of American Express in charge of buying Hilliard's company.
And his name is, or was?
Myron Dubain.
Aha. Uh-huh. And he was OSS too, was he not?
He was not only OSS, but Myron was an asset apparently through his entire adult life. At two separate times, during difficult times for this organization, he was brought in to head the Stanford Research Institute.
Mm-hmm.
In 1969, when they were at some risk over allegations that they had pretty injudiciously spread LSD all over the San Francisco Peninsula, and in 1985, when they were getting heavily involved in remote viewing.
Yeah, what should be known as, you know, alleged remote viewing.
Whatever. You know, whatever, Dave. Yep. Whatever.
Yeah, no, because there's you, if you lived out in the Bay Area where the so-called New Age has taken off, it's actually significant because, you know, the so-called New Age has its roots in exactly this thing. We haven't got time to go into it here, but a lot of this, you know, mystical hocus pocus that has really enveloped a lot of people out here. It's the successor to the hippie thing. You know, when they get off drugs, then they get on the new age, or newage, as I call it. It rhymes with sewage. But yeah, no, that has its origins with exactly the same stuff. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, the list goes on. I mean, we've talked about Jerry Falwell.
Yep.
We've talked about Richard Bulkey. We've talked about Mike Brady. We've talked about Mike Brassington, who's going on trial in 3 months and was flying the wildly corrupt premier of the Turks and Caicos Island around in a plane owned by Bill Clinton's, a White House aide to Bill Clinton, who was known as Clinton's go-to man in Florida. And then we've got defense contractors like Titan, and entities like Argyle and guys like Lou Pelini, who owned the garbage barge, and Art Nadell and Rami Obatrami, God bless him, and Adnan Khashoggi, involved in the case in several different ways, and the guy Michael Farkas, who started Skyway, that had an address at Huffman Aviation and owned the plane that got busted with 5.5 tons. Who's the American representative of a settler party in Israel to the right of Likud. And we got those Arab sheiks And none of these guys are guys that you'd meet down at the tavern, okay? You know, when you find out, you know, well, goddamn, I mean, how many spooks, you know, did you grow up with? You know, I mean, this is all, you have to be what someone has called a coincidence theorist to think that this is all isn't real.
Well, again, what you're looking at is a network, and jumping back to something that you have spoken about, that you've just delineated in synoptic fashion, Tony Blair, in the immediate aftermath of September 11th, spoke about an international or global network
that was
behind this. And, you know, it's not only a network that's connected to terrorists, which it quite obviously is, but it has connections through intelligence services, major criminal syndicates, right on up to the corridors of power themselves.
And if its existence, if it had come out 6 weeks after 9/11 that Wally Hilliard, the guy that owned the flight school, wasn't just like some schmuck flight school owner, but had a plane busted 3 weeks after Ada got here with 43 pounds of heroin, sad to say, Dave, it probably would have done a lot more damage to the world financial system than what did happen. Because the UN, some guy at the UN just came out and gave an honest interview, a UN drug guy, saying that the only liquidity there was in American banks in 2008 came from drugs.
One of the things that, as we're talking about these powerful figures who, you know, again, some of the superficial front men are not names that we've heard about. A lot of these organized crime people I've never heard of before, but at the same time, when you start following these networks, you come right on up through various intelligence services, right on up to some people who are obviously major, major figures. I mean, you start with Wally Hilliard and you wind up with the Bush family, among others. And when you think about it, you know, this country's being deindustrialized. You walk into any store that caters to working class or middle class people and you try to find a product that's made in the United States. The jobs aren't here anymore, and so when they haven't, you know, how do they keep things afloat? And increasingly, organized crime and its partners in the intelligence community and the financial industry are helping to keep things afloat. There's another one of my frequent guests, Daniel, a woman named Lucy Commissar, who has done some remarkable investigating of the financial industry and some of the things that were done, like AIG, which goes back to OSS, among other things. And, mm-hmm. and you know, as she was talking about what led to the meltdown, you know, naked short selling and all this stuff, it makes my head spin. I have a tough time following it. The whole bloody financial and investment industry is crooked as a $3 bill. The only thing that's noteworthy really about Madoff is that he got busted. You know, and the whole stinking thing is crooked.
Which brings me back to what I said to you when we began our conversation today, that what I am reporting on is constantly, no matter what it happens to be at that moment, is the crime that can't be solved.
Yep. And the names that cannot be spoken, they who must not be mentioned.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It is, it's depressing, and it's infuriating, but then again, Daniel, that's why we fight, huh?
Well, okay.
let me hazard a guess here. You're certainly not getting rich. I don't make any bloody money at all from this, you know? I mean, you know, every once in a while I go do a speaking engagement and pick up what wouldn't even be the tip for lunch money for most of these people. But we're not making money, and we're certainly not I don't think either of us is going to appear on American Idol. So, but basically, you know, the funny thing is that some of the people who are within the power structure who do fight against this, a minority, in my opinion, but the same thing, basically, they actually took the idea of America seriously. More the fool them, and perhaps more the fool you and I. But, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, hey, a small and shrinking minority, I'm sorry to say.
Well, I have a startling revelation about the Al-Qaeda African connection, but I'm going to save that for a subsequent appearance, which will occur after I've written about it. But when I read about that a week or so ago, I looked up the plane involved and discovered that I had quite a bit of material on that plane already.
By the way, this is a reference. Two articles, by the way. I'm going to promote my own website here ever so briefly, spitfirelist.com. And one of the new features on the new front page is basically among the categories of posts are news and supplemental. And you'll see on the upper right-hand page something I call food for thought. And then when those articles are replaced, they feed down the left-hand side. And eventually they will feed off into the news and supplemental. So you go to the top of the website, click on posts, and you'll be able to update yourselves. It was a major article from Reuters which said that Al-Qaeda, I suspect they're actually talking about the Muslim Brotherhood in the Maghreb, but Al-Qaeda linked to Rogue Aviation Network, and they were talking about what quite obviously to any veteran listener to these broadcasts and anyone familiar with Daniel's work are these very same aviation networks that they're talking about. And also, another very interesting article, good luck to the attorney in question, but a U.S. attorney in New York has merged his intelligence and terror investigating units into one centralized unit because what, as obviously as the article explains, and these are both, by the way, in the news and supplemental post. One of them, I think, is still on the front page. The other one is fed into the news and supplemental section. So you go to categories, click on that, or you go to posts, then you go to categories. Posts is at the top of the page. Click on categories and go into news and supplemental, and you can read about the African connection Daniel's talking about. And also, at least one U.S. attorney in Manhattan has basically taken the bit in his mouth and is running with it, and he has merged his investigation into international terror with his investigation into international narcotics trafficking, and they are one big unit, which will come as no surprise to Daniel Hopsicker or any of the people familiar with his magnificent work.
Well, gosh darn, it's interesting old world. And what's most interesting about it is that when you read the news in the newspaper, it barely scratches the surface. And in things about which the whole world's attention is focused, which is always shocking to me, 9/11, you know, you would have thought that where did these guys go to school? Who owned the flight schools? You know, what were they doing? Would have been like questions you'd have read about in the newspaper.
Yeah. And occasionally they do publish stuff, Daniel. When they busted the largest terror financing operation in history, it led directly to the Republican Party, a former director of Harkin Energy who gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention, interceded on their behalf, and surprise, surprise, he's part of the BCCI media. So it's there. It just doesn't get the publicity it deserves. And you know, one of the things you've been able to do is to take some of this documentation, both published and within the files of various agencies, and put it together. But, Daniel, we are almost out of time. Tell us about your website. Tell us about your books. Tell us about your videos.
Well, Mad Cow Prod, and I'm just finishing, having been working assiduously for far longer than I should have, on my new documentary, The New American Drug Lords. And so anybody that wants to go to my website, watch a bunch of segments that have already been posted, buy one, or even donate some money to help publicize it when it does come out next month, that would be just outstanding because, no, this is not remunerative work.
All righty. Well,
it's only for, you know, dedicated researchers and the seriously pissed off. And you can guess where I fall along that line.
All righty. Well, I think you've made it very clear, and we are all out of time. Hopefully people will follow those suggestions. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 703, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, catching up with the herd shot round the world. This program has been recorded on February 7th of the year 2010. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.